An hour after leaving the Assiniboine village, Preacher shrugged into the sheepskin coat he'd brought with him. The air was getting downright chilly. When the Gros Ventre rode out of the Assiniboine village, they'd been headed due west. There wasn't any doubt that they were going to go through the notch into the Badlands and then make their way across that rugged stretch back to their own stomping grounds. So the Assiniboine headed for the notch as well, taking the trail that had been carved out over the years by their ponies. Preacher knew from previous visits to these parts that a heavy snowfall might block that gap in the ridge, which ran for 20 miles or more. If the pursuers couldn't get through the notch, but had to go the long way around instead, they wouldn't have any chance of catching the raiders before the Gros Ventre got back to their village. That would complicate any effort to rescue the prisoners and make it much more difficult. So Bent Leg and Two Bears, who could read the weather as well as Preacher could, kept the war party moving as quickly as possible. Long hours in the saddle made Preacher's side ache, but there was nothing he could do about that. As long as the wound didn't break open and start bleeding heavily again, he could put up with a little pain. Snow began to fall in mid-afternoon, lightly at first, then faster and thicker, but not too bad. The war party had already started to climb the wooded slopes towards the notch. Audie rode alongside Preacher.
I think we're going to make it. At the rate the snow is falling, it'll be morning before there's any danger of the gap being blocked, if then.
Yeah, that's as long as the snow don't get any worse.
Yes, of course. But even if it does, I think we're going to be close enough that we can make a run for it and get through in time.
I hope you're right. Last little while, though, I started having a funny feeling on the back of my neck. Like we might have some trouble waiting for us that we don't know about yet.
I trust those instincts of yours, Preacher. I reckon we better keep our eyes open.
Well, we're doing that anyway. But I agree with you, Lorenzo. In situations such as this, Preacher is nearly always...
Ambush! Find cover!
Preacher and his companion dismounted quickly and knelt behind thick-trunked pine.
Anybody see those damn bushwhackers?
I think they're in a clump of rocks about 100 yards up the slope.
Preacher risked a look and saw gray fringes of powder smoke floating in the air above the boulders Audie had mentioned. Audie was right. It had to be where the hidden riflemen were holed up.
You reckon it's some of them Gros Ventre?
Yeah, more than likely. Snakehart must be pretty smart. He knows it's a race between them, us, and that snow now, so he left some men behind to slow us down and give more of a chance to win.
Some of Bent Leg's warriors sent arrows arching toward the boulders, but at this range, if any of them hit their target, it was going to be pure luck. Preacher, Lorenzo, Audie, and Nighthawk opened fire on the rock. Most of their shots ricocheted harmlessly.
Hold on! We're just wasting powder and lead. They're dug in up there, and there ain't much we can do about it from where we are.
Preacher looked along the line of trees where the war party had taken cover, and his heart leapt into his throat when he spotted Bent Leg lying behind one of the pines with Two Bears working over it. It was obvious that the chief was wounded.
You fellas make it hot for those varmints for a minute. Bent Leg's been hit, and I'm gonna go see how bad he is.
All right, Preacher, go!
They opened fire as the mountain man sprinted toward the tree where Bent Leg lay. By the time Preacher reached the tree, Two Bears had Bent Leg sitting up with his back propped against the trunk. Preacher knelt behind a nearby tree, since that one wasn't big enough to shield all of them.
How bad is it?
Two Bears was wrapping a strip of cloth around Bent Leg's upper right arm.
I live. I can fight.
His arm is broken. I will bind up the wound, then tie branches on it as splints.
My arm is not...
You cannot go on. You must go back to the village.
The warriors of the Assiniboine need their chief.
And they will still need their chief when they return.
Preacher picked up a couple of branches and tossed them over to Two Bears.
Here, use those. They look like they'll keep that arm straight until we can get back to the village and the women can take care of it properly.
When Two Bears had the chief's broken arm splinted, Bent Leg leaned back against the tree.
You will lead the war party now.
Of course. We must get around the men Snakeheart left behind.
The snow continued to fall slowly, but steadily getting thicker. White had already started to accumulate on the ground and on the tree branches.
I will circle around and attack them from behind.
By yourself? They'll kill you if you do that. Half a dozen rifles against a tomahawk and a knife ain't my idea of a fair fight.
Then what do you think we should do, white man?
You let me and Nighthawk go. I'll give him my two extra pistols. If we can get amongst them before we open fire, we'll make the odds look a heap better in a hurry.
It is wise. Preacher and the Crow are known for their stealth.
No one is stealthier than Two Bears.
Yeah, well, maybe not. But I reckon Nighthawk has probably handled pistols more than you have.
Two Bears didn't like it, but he couldn't argue with the logic of Preacher's argument. Preacher caught Nighthawk's attention and motioned back the way they had come from.
Dog, you come with me too.
The Gros Ventres continued firing from the rocks, but to be honest, they weren't the best shots in the world. A couple of the Assiniboine had taken charge of the horses and led them back away from the standoff.
Nighthawk, come on.
Preacher went to horse and drew the two extra pistols from their sheaths. He handed them to the Crow.
They're loaded and charged, and I know you know how to use them. You and me are gonna circle around and hit them varmints from behind. Those pistols are double shot, so are the ones I'm carrying. Hell, when we cut loose our wolf, we might just take down a whole damn bunch of them with one volley.
Moving quickly on foot with Dog trotting along beside him, Preacher and Nighthawk made their way through the woods at right angles to the trail they'd been following. The going was rough because of thick brush, but the two men were good at finding openings where none seemed to exist at all. When they'd covered several hundred yards, Preacher turned back toward the ridge. The growth would make it hard for the Gros Ventres to spot him now. Preacher blinked away snowflakes that landed on his eyelashes and melted as he and Nighthawk started up the slope. Preacher gradually maneuvered himself and Nighthawk above the Gros Ventres bushwhackers hidden in the boulders. They went to their bellies and crawled through the snow until they came out on a jutting lip of land that overlooked the cluster of rocks. Preacher had estimated that there were six Gros Ventres riflemen. A quick head count confirmed that. All the raiders seemed to be uninjured, which meant that none of the arrows or rifle shots fired from below had found their marks. That didn't surprise Preacher.
We need to get down there closer. These pistols ain't accurate for distance work.
Nighthawk nodded, but didn't say anything. He gestured toward the slope in front of him, which was pretty steep as it led down to the rocks where the Gros Ventres were crouched.
Yeah, I see what you mean. If we slide down, we'll be right in the middle of them by the time they know we're coming.
Nighthawk nodded gravely.
And I don't need to be doing much jumping anyway on account of this crease in my side. Yeah, so this'll work out for the best. You ready?
Nighthawk took the pistols from behind his belt and cocked them by way of answer. With a tight grin on his face, Preacher slipped closer to the edge. He swung his legs around so he could slide down feet first. He motioned for Dog to stay right now. When the time came, he'd give the big cur the order to attack. Nighthawk moved up beside Preacher and nodded again to indicate his readiness. Preacher cocked both of his pistols and lifted them. He used his legs to pull himself forward. And suddenly, his weight tipped him in that direction as well. He started sliding down the hard-packed slope toward the rocks. Instinct must have warned one of the Gros Ventres warriors. He glanced around as he reloaded his rifle, then he jumped to his feet. He swung his rifle up, but before he could fire, Preacher was practically on top of him. As Preacher reached the bottom of the slope, he swung his right-hand pistol toward a spot between a particularly large boulder where three of the Gros Ventres crouched. Two of the three raiders went down, but that left the third warrior.
No!
The big cur sailed off the top of the slope in a leap that carried him right into the man who had just fired at Preacher. Preacher swung around now to find out how the Crow was doing. He was in time to see Nighthawk finish off the last of the Gros Ventres with a blow that sent the head of his tomahawk biting deep into the man's skull. All six of the bushwhackers were accounted for. The shooting from the trees down below had stopped. Preacher figured Audie and Lorenzo must have heard the pistols and realized that Preacher and Nighthawk had launched their attack.
Hold your fire! Me and Nighthawk are coming out!
He stepped away from the boulders where the others could see him and waved to them.
Come ahead! The varmints have all gone under.
Within a few minutes, Audie, Lorenzo, and the members of the Assiniboine War Party had hiked up the slope to join Preacher and Nighthawk. Bentleg was haggard from the pain of his broken leg, but still firmly in command.
None of our warriors were killed in this ambush, but three besides myself were injured badly enough to go back to the village. You are four fewer now.
Yeah, well, six of them are dead. We're whittling them down.
The snow still falls. Their deaths cost us time we may not be able to afford.
You're right. We need to get moving again.
I lead the war party and give the orders, white men. Not you.
That's fine. As long as we get those prisoners back safe and sound, I don't give a damn who's in charge.
Once the wounded had turned back to the village and the rest of the war party was back on the trail leading up to the notch in the ridge, Lorenzo rode next to Preacher.
I'm starting to pick up some of the lingo, but I couldn't keep up with all the jabbering going on. Who's in charge here, you or Two Bears?
Two Bears is the war chief. He's giving the orders. As long as they're the right ones and don't seem likely to get us killed.
And if what he wants to do ain't the right thing?
Then we're liable to have trouble.
Snow had started to collect in the notch when Deaver, Snakeheart, and the rest of the Grovaunt raiding party rode through it. But the passage was far from being blocked. A short time earlier, they had heard a lot of shooting coming from down below. Deaver hoped that meant any Assiniboine who were coming after him had been wiped out by the men Snakeheart had left behind. They'd know later when those men either rejoined them or didn't. For now, Deaver was confident that they were still ahead of any pursuit. Snakeheart seemed to be equally confident because he called a halt on the other side of the notch so they could rest their horses. Deaver and his partners dismounted. Caleb Manning came over.
Are you going to talk to Snakeheart about those women now, Willie?
Don't get in such a hurry. I said I'd talk to him when we got back to the Grovaunt village.
I know. It's just been a long time since any of us have been with a woman.
You reckon this is a good place for carrying on?
Well, no. I was just hoping we could get things settled with Snakeheart, so we'll know what's waiting for us when we get back to the village.
Let's just worry about getting back there first.
Manning did not look happy about it, but he nodded. Despite what Deaver had said to his lieutenant, his eyes kept going back to the Assiniboine woman he found so striking. Like the other captives, she had her hands lashed together in front of her with rawhide thongs, but her legs were free so she could ride. When the Grovaunt warrior who had been riding double with her lifted her down from the pony, as soon as her moccasin-shod feet touched the ground, she swung her clubbed hands against the side of his head in an unexpected blow. The impact made the warrior stagger to the side. The woman seized the opportunity to run. She dashed toward the notch in the ridge. Deaver wasn't sure where she thought she was going. She couldn't possibly get away. Her path took her fairly close to him, and Deaver took a swift step and reached out to wrap his arm around the woman's waist and jerk her to a halt.
Let me go! You bastard! Let me go!
Speak the white man's tongue, do you, girl?
Snakeheart strode up. Snakeheart grabbed her, sliding one arm around her neck and using his other hand to bring up his knife. Tip of the blade pricked the soft skin under her chin.
Next time you try to escape, you die. How are you called?
I am Ravenswing.
Ravenswing. Never again will you fly like a raven, Assiniboine. Your wings are clipped. You are Snakeheart's woman now.
You might thank me for grabbing her.
The woman would not have gotten away.
Maybe not, but I made sure of that. And if you want to pay me back for helping out like that...
What is it you want?
My men have been a long time without a woman. When we returned to your village, I know they'd appreciate it if they got to spend some time with those prisoners. And if you'd allow them to do that, I'd appreciate it too.
What about you? You do not want a woman?
I didn't say that.
Oh, he wanted a woman, all right. One woman. The one called Ravenswing. There was no denying it. And he promised himself in that moment that he would find a way to have her somehow, no matter what it took, short of ruining his plans to get rich.
Very well. When we return to the village, your men can have their pick of the prisoners. Except for this one. She belongs to Snakeheart.
Night was not far off when Preacher and his companions reached the top of the ridge and the gap that led through it. Snow had drifted a couple of feet deep in the notch, but it was still passable for the horses.
Once again, we face a journey through the Badlands. Can your dog follow a scent through the snow?
Yeah, maybe. It won't be easy, though.
We are not going to catch them. We will have to follow them all the way to their village.
Yeah, it looks like you're right. Can you find the place?
I can find it.
Yeah, but can you find your way through the Badlands, or will we be wandering around in there for the rest of the winter?
I will lead us through. And once I have, it will not be difficult to locate the Grovant village.
Audie had moved his horse up alongside their mounts while they talked.
Maybe we could trade something to the Grovant for the prisoners. A lot of times that's all it amounts to when they take captives, just something to give them some bargaining power.
Not Snakeheart. He has no interest in ransom or in trading with us. His heart is filled with hate, as his name says, and all he wants to do is kill Assiniboine. He will hold them so we have no choice but to come for them. And he believes that when we do, he will kill all of us.
Well then, I reckon we'll just have to surprise him.
The rescue party camped just below the notch. It was a long, cold, miserable night as the men huddled in their robes and blankets. With the wind blowing and the snow falling, it was impossible to keep a fire going, so there was no hot food. No chance to warm up next to merrily dancing flames. The cold made the wound in Preacher's side ache like a son of a gun, and his head throbbed from the wallop it had taken. He was getting too old for adventures like this, he told himself as he lay with a couple of blankets tucked tightly around him and tried not to shiver from the cold. One of these days he ought to just go back home, get some land to farm, maybe find him a widow woman to marry. He could sit on the porch of an evening, smoke his pipe, watch the sun go down, and just enjoy the peace and quiet. Well, that was about as likely to happen as it was for buffalo to sprout wings and go flying over the prairie. For some men, such things were just never gonna happen, and Preacher knew he was one of them. Someday he would die with a bullet or an arrow or a knife in him, either freezing on a mountaintop or scorching under a desert sun. He just hoped that when his time came, he had a weapon of his own in his hand, and the last thing he heard on this earth was his enemy's dying scream. For a man like Preacher, that'd be a good death. Hell, it was a better death than going to meet his maker, lying in a bed somewhere peaceful with a bunch of folks standing around him with glum expressions on their faces. Of course, given the tumultuous life he'd led, it would more likely be old Scratch waiting for him on the other side of the divide, not St. Peter. In that case, Preacher would just spit in the son of a bitch's face and keep on fighting. It was what he did, and with those thoughts in his head, he dozed off. Preacher woke up an unknowable time later. He'd gone to sleep with a pistol in one hand, the other shotgun behind his belt, and his rifle right beside him. Dog was on his other side. As he threw the blankets aside and sat up, he saw that the big cur was already standing, ears pricked forward.
Sick 'em, dog!
Dog was off like a shot, arrowing toward some struggling figures nearby. Preacher knew the dog's sensitive nose would tell him which men were friends and which ones were foes. Snakeheart had struck again. When the first bunch of ambushers never returned, the Grovant war chief had sent some of his men doubling back to attack the pursuers. Drawing his other pistol, Preacher strode forward, but he had only gone a couple of steps when a figure lunged at him out of the darkness. Preacher wheeled to his left as his instincts warned him. An arrow cut through the air beside his head. When it was all over, Preacher's knife dripped red, and bodies were sprawled around on the rocky ground with snow collecting on them. Preacher sought out his friends and was relieved to find that Lorenzo, Audie, and Nighthawk were all right.
It was a near thing. I come mighty close to getting my brains bashed out by one of them Govant who come after me with a tomahawk. I got my rifle up just in time to jab him in the belly with it and hold him off until I could pull the trigger.
Blood welled from a shallow gash on Audie's forehead, but that was the only injury among the four of them. The Assiniboine rescue party had suffered three more deaths, though.
One of the men who died was standing guard. It would have been worse if he had not been able to sound the alarm, even mortally wounded.
Six Grovant warriors were dead. Again, the Assiniboine had dealt out more damage than they had received. At this rate, the parties would soon be close to the same strength, if they weren't already. But that didn't really matter, because as soon as the Grovant reached their village, the odds would go back up again. Frustration gnawed at the mountain man's gut as he thought about the things that might happen to Ravenswing and the other captives before the rescue party caught up to him. They pitched the bodies of the Grovant into a ravine for the scavengers. The bodies of the Assiniboine who'd been killed were wrapped in blankets and placed in a hollow, and their fellow warriors piled rocks on top of them to form a cairn. That was just about all they could do to protect the remains of their former comrades from predators. No one slept much the rest of the night. For those who did doze off, their slumber was haunted by memories and nightmares. Crossing the Badlands took most of a day, and even though Deaver had been through here before on the way to the Assiniboine village, he knew he would have gotten hopelessly lost in a hurry if he'd had to navigate through these wastes on his own. But Snakeheart seemed to know exactly where he was going, and Deaver was grateful for that. When the raiders camped the night before, Snakeheart kept Ravenswing close to him, tied hand and foot. But he hadn't tried to assault her. This barren, rocky terrain was too cold and uncomfortable for such goings-on, as Deaver had pointed out to Caleb Manning the previous day. Snakeheart was willing to wait until they got back to the Grovant village for that. The other raiders were equally patient. The Assiniboine women sobbed softly to themselves, but as far as Deaver could see, they really didn't have that much to complain about so far. Sure, they'd been ripped away violently from their homes and families, tied up, carried into these badlands, but things could have been a lot worse for them. Things would be a lot worse for them. Just give their Grovant captors some time. The raiding party was considerably smaller now. Snakeheart had lost some men in the attack on the Assiniboine village itself, and during the pursuit, he had left two separate bunch of warriors on their back trail to discourage the Assiniboine. Surprisingly, none of those men had come back, which likely meant they were all dead. The pursuers were giving a much better account of themselves than Deaver had expected. And they were still back there, still coming along doggedly after them. The Grovant got confirmation of that late in the afternoon when they paused on top of a hogback ridge and looked back out over the rugged terrain they had crossed that day, which was now covered with snow. Snakeheart leveled an arm and pointed.
There!
Deaver looked where the war chief was pointing. At first, he didn't see anything. Then he spotted some tiny black dots moving against the white landscape, and he grunted in recognition.
Riders!
Snakeheart nodded. He had Ravenswing on his pony today, sitting in front of him with her hands tied again. He hadn't given her a chance to make another break for freedom. Her head was still up, though, and defiant anger still burned in her dark eyes.
I can see him, but I can't make out any details. Got to be the Assiniboine, though.
My people will kill all of you. Preacher and Two Bears will lead them, and you will all die.
Snakeheart cuffed her on the side of the head.
You think that mountain man's gonna help you? Preacher's dead. I put a rifle ball in him myself. And then later during the fighting, my horse trampled him and stove in his skull. He's dead, girl. Don't you make any mistake about that.
Deaver's words did something that all the other mistreatment Raven's Wing had received had failed to accomplish. They made despair appear in her eyes.
You mourn over a white man? They are even more disgusting than the Assiniboine. If you allowed a white man to touch you, truly you are fit to be only the lowest of slaves.
Snakeheart pulled his horse around.
They cannot catch us. We will be back in our village by nightfall. And once we are there, no one will dare to come after us. The Assiniboine are finished. They might as well turn around and go home.
As the raiders rode on, Manning rode over next to Deaver.
I'm sure looking forward to getting there, Willie. Now that Snakeheart's promised us some time with those squaws, this is gonna be some night.
Yeah. The snow was still falling when the pursuit resumed that morning, but it stopped by midday, although the sky did remain overcast. Once again, the pursuers relied on Dog's keen nose to guide them, because the snow had blotted out the tracks of the Gros Ventre as it fell. Two Bears was convinced that he knew his way through the Badlands. The preacher could tell that the war chief was glad they had Dog along too. Sometimes the big cur lost a scent, but he always found it again, and the paths he took agreed for the most part with the way Two Bears thought they should go. Preacher rode with Lorenzo, Audie, and Nighthawk. Lorenzo had bound up Audie's head wound with some strips torn off his shirt.
Since we ain't likely to catch them before they get back to their village, what do you reckon we'll do once we get there?
Snakeheart is bound to have left some of his warriors behind, which means that his force will be considerably stronger than ours again. And since they'll be expecting trouble, I don't think a direct attack would prove to be successful. That's true. They might kill the captives rather than letting us rescue them. Snakeheart is certainly cruel enough to do just that.
I ain't gonna kill nobody. I'm thinking me and Nighthawk will get into the village and free the prisoners. Then the rest of the bunch can attack as a diversion while we get the gals out of there.
Let me get this straight. You're gonna turn them women loose, and then we gonna take off a hole, right?
Yeah, that's about the size of it.
Well, what's to stop this Snakeheart fella from coming after us? Seems like we're liable to just take turns chasing each other back and forth across those blasted Badlands.
I can't vouch for the rest of the Gros Ventre, but I'm gonna see to it that Snakeheart don't come after us.
Now, how do you plan on doing that?
By killing him.
Oh, well, I should have known it, I reckon. And never asked the question in the first place.
Dog wasn't infallible. He led him down a few false trails, a few dead ends that required the members of the war party to turn around and retrace their steps until Dog picked up the scent again. But that big cur led him through this snowy, trackless wasteland better than anybody else could have. And for damn sure better than Two Bears. Although Preacher didn't bother voicing that opinion even to his friends, who would have agreed with him. Not no point in it. They came to the end of the Badlands as the light was fading from the overcast sky. Preacher was glad to see some trees again after the seemingly endless expanse of rock and bare ground. He had no idea what had caused the lack of vegetation or what calamity had scored and scoured the ground behind him. But during his long years of wandering, he had encountered similar blighted places elsewhere on the frontier. Stretches of barren wasteland and country that was green and lush everywhere else. At the moment, the terrain in front of him wasn't green, but rather white, because it was covered with snow. But at least it didn't have great gashes in the earth running through it anymore. The group stopped to rest their horses.
How far is the Gros Ventre village from here?
We cannot reach it by nightfall.
Can you find it in the dark?
Perhaps.
Maybe it would be better to wait for morning.
No. I will not leave our women in the hands of those savages that much longer.
If we try to find the village tonight and wind up getting lost, it might take us that much longer tomorrow to find it.
I agree with Two Bears. We know the general direction they were going. We keep heading that way. We ought to smell their smoke sooner or later.
They'll be waiting for us, won't they?
More than likely.
Then I think we should go on, too. Gives them less time to get ready for us that way.
The black-white man is right.
I appreciate somebody realizing that for a change. But about that black-white man...
We go.
Darkness closed in quickly once the riders entered the trees. cold, the gloom, and the quiet created an eerie atmosphere that sent shivers creeping up Preacher's spine. It came as a relief when he lifted his head and caught a faint tang of wood smoke. The fire meant that there was somebody alive in these parts. Unless, of course, it was the pits of Hades he was smelling.
No, that can't be. I don't smell no brimstone.
What? Brimstone? What you talking about, Preacher?
Nothing. Forget it. I didn't even know I said that out loud.
Man goes talking to himself, it generally ain't a good thing. It's even worse if he starts answering.
Yeah, well, I reckon that's true.
Preacher nudged horse forward until he came up alongside two bears.
I smell smoke.
So do I. The Grovant camp is ahead of us. It will be there soon.
Probably be a good idea to stop and figure out exactly what we're doing.
Yes, we should talk. You and the Crow are not going into the Grovant village.
A blast!
You and I are going. And this time, you will not persuade me otherwise.
Preacher frowned in thought. He'd seen two bears in action and knew the man could handle himself in a fight. Two bears would have never become the war chief of Bent Leg's band if that weren't the case. But being good at brawling didn't mean two bears could sneak into an enemy camp without being seen or heard. And Preacher knew from experience that Nighthawk was capable of that.
The lives of all those prisoners depend on us getting in there without the Grovant knowing about it.
You think I cannot do it?
I did not say that. But I don't know that you can, and that's a whole other thing. I ain't sure I want to risk everything.
On my abilities? Is that what you're saying?
Preacher stopped horse as well, and the rest of the rescue party followed suit.
You want the bold-faced truth? That's exactly what I'm saying. I've seen enough to know that you're a fine warrior, but sneaking around is not the same thing as fighting.
You should call it skulking, Preacher. Sneaking don't sound as good.
Skulking isn't usually an admirable activity either.
I tell you, I can do this thing. I would not lie out of stubborn pride. Not with the life of Raven's Wing riding in the balance.
All right. The two of us will go in there and free the prisoners. As soon as we got them clear, we'll give the signal to attack. Does that sound good to you?
I believe it will work. But one of us must make sure that Snakeheart dies. Without him to lead them, there is at least a chance the Grovant will not pursue us. They probably have little appetite for fighting in weather such as this.
I reckon you're right. Let's go get the lay of the land.
The rescue party rode on. With Preacher, Two Bears, and Dog leading the way, they had no trouble following the trail of campfire smoke that guided them toward the Grovant village. When the smell became strong enough to tell them that the village was close, Two Bears called a halt.
Preacher and I will scout. The rest of you stay here for now.
I think Audie should come with us too.
I appreciate the vote of confidence, Preacher, but I really don't think I'm in the same league as the Ghost Killer when it comes to stealth.
I didn't mean you'd slip into the village with us. But when Two Bears and me get those prisoners loose, we're gonna need somebody close by to turn them over to. I reckon that'd be a good job for you. You can hustle them away from the village and make sure they're safe while Two Bears and I go back to help with the killing.
I see. That makes sense. I'm ready whenever you are.
Nighthawk lifted Audie down from his horse. Preacher told Dog to stay with the others. On foot now, Preacher, Audie, and Two Bears stole through the pine forest, making their way even closer to the Grovant village. Knowing that Snakeheart would have posted guards around the encampment, they moved as silently as they could, eventually dropping to hands and knees to crawl forward. A moment later, footsteps sounded nearby. That was one of the guards as he and his companions lay there absolutely silent and utterly motionless. The man was about 10 feet away, coming closer. If he discovered him, they would have to kill him quickly and without any fuss. They couldn't afford for him to sound the alarm now. Soundlessly, the Preacher moved his hand to his knife and gripped it. Then the guard turned, walking at right angles to the way he'd been going, so he passed only 2 feet away without ever knowing they were there. He laid there with Audie and Two Bears until the guard was out of earshot, and then they resumed their stealthy crawl. A few moments later, Two Bears signaled another halt. He tapped Preacher on the shoulder. Preacher crawled forward as Two Bears parted some brush to reveal a tiny gap they could use to spy on the Grovant village. Several campfires burned, casting a flickering glow over the scene. At first glance, the place wasn't much different from the Assiniboine village. Same sort of wood and earth and hide lodges were scattered around a fairly level clearing in the woods. Even though Preacher couldn't see it, he knew there would be a stream somewhere close by so the villagers would get water. By this time of night, all the women and children were asleep, but several warriors were still moving around, checking on horses or taking care of other chores. The hide flap over the entrance to one lodge was pushed back, and a man stepped out of the dwelling. Two Bears touched Preacher's shoulder and put his mouth close to the mountain man's ear.
Snakeheart.
That fella even looked a little like a snake, lean and evil. The Grovon chief turned to say something to someone inside the lodge, and as he held the flap back, Preacher looked inside and saw a couple of white men. Although quite a bit of time had passed since the encounter at Blind Pete's, Preacher recognized them as Willie Deaver and Caleb Manning. So he hadn't imagined seeing Deaver during the fight back at the Assiniboine village. The man really had been there. Preacher saw something else in the lodge that interested him. Several long crates had been dragged into the structure. Preacher caught just a glimpse of them before Snakeheart let the hide flap fall closed and stalked off toward another lodge. But that was enough. Preacher had a hunch he was looking at crates full of new rifles like the one the Grovon had used in their raid. And if that was true, it made things very different indeed. The Grovon who had remained behind in the village were happy to see the raiders when they returned. Women, children, and the warriors who had not ridden with Snakeheart came out to welcome them. The Assiniboine women were herded into a single lodge. Packing them in like that would make it easier to stand guard over them. Deaver had already dismounted and turned his horse over to Manning. He went to find Snakeheart and remind the chief of their bargain.
You said my men could have their choice of the prisoners for the night.
I remember what was said. My men wish to have their time with the captives as well.
Blast it, we had a deal.
Our deal involved rifles and pelts. That arrangement is concluded. Anything else you or your men may get is a matter of generosity on my part.
Fine. You got what you wanted. You can afford to be generous.
I suppose. There are five of you. I will give you two women. For the night, you understand, not permanently.
All right. My men can take turns. They won't care that much. It won't be the first time.
What about you? You will not take part?
I'm the chief of my men, and I don't share with them. I want a woman of my own.
Is there one particular woman you want?
Not really. I just don't want to share with my men.
I will think on it and tell you my decision later. Those two lodges are for you and your men.
Fine. Thanks.
In the fading light, the members of the raiding party dispersed to take care of their ponies and return to their lodges. Deaver rejoined his men and waved a hand toward the two dwellings Snakeheart had pointed out to him.
That's where we'll be staying. Caleb and I will be in one of them, you three in the other one.
Even though he had told Snakeheart that he didn't want to share a woman with his men, he was willing to share a lodge with Manning, and for good reason. He knew Manning was ambitious, and had never paid to trust an ambitious man too much. If he claimed one of the lodges for his own and made the other four share, they might resent that. Deaver didn't want Manning sitting in there with Plunkett, Heath, and Jordan fanning that resentment. A 3-2 split was way more natural.
How long we gonna be staying here, Willie? Our business with the Grovon is finished, ain't it?
I don't really want to leave with this much snow on the ground. We'll wait until the weather gets better before we pull out.
We need a place to spend the winter. Why not here? Plenty of fine-looking squaws to keep us warm during those cold nights.
That sounds good to me, too.
You let me worry about that. I do the thinking for this bunch, remember?
Them boys aren't trying to cause trouble. They're just concerned about our long-term plans. You can't blame them for that.
I'm not blaming anybody. We'll work it all out. I've never let you boys down so far, have I?
That's the God's honest truth. You've been a bloody good leader, Willie. Bloody good.
Let's keep it that way. Come on. I'll bet Snakeheart's gonna send some squaws pretty soon with something for us to eat.
There was a surprise waiting in the lodge that Deaver intended to share with Manning. The crates containing the extra rifles were being stored there. Just seeing them made Deaver feel better for some reason, even though the weapons belonged to the Gros Ventre now. As Deaver predicted, a couple of women brought pots of stew to the lodges. The men gathered in Deaver's lodge and dug in with their hands, Indian fashion. Manning took one of the jugs of whiskey from the crates and passed it around, and they washed the food down with swigs of the fiery stuff. Deaver explained that Snakeheart had promised them two of the Assiniboine prisoners for the night.
Do we get to pick the two?
If we do, I've got a couple in mind.
Nothing was said about that. I reckon you'll have to do with whatever shows up. And you'll use the other lodge for whatever goes on, too.
Turn it into a prude in your old age, Willie?
Not hardly. But I've got other things on my mind tonight, boys. This is just the start of big things for us. Just the start.
When they were finished with their supper, Plunkett, Jordan, and Heath went back over to the other lodge, leaving Deaver and Manning alone. Manning sat on one of the crates and patted it affectionately.
Come spring, are we going to have St. John deliver another load of these rifles to us, Willie?
That's the idea. We won't have any trouble finding some more savages willing to trade pelts for them. Who knows? Maybe we'll go see the Assiniboine and offer to trade pelts with them.
Arm both sides in this feud, you mean? Oh, I like that idea, Willie. I really do.
Someone pushed back the hide flap over the entrance. Snakeheart stepped into the lodge. Deaver and Manning stood up to greet the Gros Ventre chief.
The prisoners will be brought soon. Two for the other men, and one for you, Deaver.
Thanks, chief.
Snakeheart gave him a curt nod and turned to leave the lodge. He stopped in the entrance and looked back at him.
When enough of the snow melts to make travel easier, you and your friends will leave our village. Our business with you is done. You will not spend the winter with us, as the white men were with the Assiniboine.
Fine. For now, we appreciate your hospitality.
Sounds like you got a good deal for yourself, Willie.
I had to do something to make him respect me. Otherwise, he might have tried to take advantage of all of us.
Well, that makes sense, I guess.
Of course it makes sense. You know I always have what's best for all of us in mind.
Uh-huh.
Before either of them could say anything else, Deaver heard someone outside. He stepped over to the entrance and shoved the flap back. Half a dozen Gros Ventre warriors herded along three of the Assiniboine captives. Deaver was disappointed but not surprised to see that Raven's Wing was not among them. One of the warriors pointed at Deaver and then nodded toward the prisoners. Deaver interpreted that to mean that he was supposed to choose one of these women. He looked them over and saw that they were all about the same, reasonably attractive, but not nearly as appealing as Raven's Wing. He was prepared to let the other man have the two best looking of the trio, but there really wasn't enough difference in him for that. Almost at random, he walked over to one of the women and reached out to put a hand on her shoulder.
No point in worrying about it, darling. You're coming with me.
Manning had hurried over to the other lodge and gotten Plunkett, Jordan, and Heath to come out. Those men had big smiles on their faces as they emerged from the lodge, even the normally dour Darwin Heath. Big, bluff Fred Jordan took the arms of the other two captives and steered them into the lodge. Plunkett and Heath followed them into the dwelling. Manning hesitated.
I'll see you later, Willie. You enjoy yourself. I intend to.
Yeah!
Deaver pushed the woman toward the lodge.
Let's go.
The warriors who had delivered the prisoners trooped away as the white men went into the lodges with the women. Deaver closed the entrance flap and tried not to think about Raven's Wing.
Get your clothes off.
This woman's crying was gonna get tiresome in a hurry. He would tell her once to shut up. And if that didn't work, he'd see if his fist could make her stop crying. He was willing to bet that it could. So when he stepped closer to her and her eyes widened, at first he thought the reaction was because she was afraid of him. Then he realized that she was surprised instead. And not only that, she was looking at something over his shoulder rather than staring at him. He barely had time to think about that and what it might mean before something crashed into the back of his head and sent him spiraling forward into darkness. After Snakeheart left the lodge where Deaver and Manning were, Preacher, Audie, and Two Bears backed away through the brush until Preacher thought it was safe to whisper again.
Did you see what was in there with those two varmints?
It looked like boxes of some sort.
Crates full of new rifles would be my guess.
Deaver and his friends are running guns for the Grovant?
Yeah, that's the way it looks to me. You know, we'd go a long way toward evening up the odds if our Assiniboine pards had some of those rifles.
Preacher, you're not suggesting that we try to steal one of those crates of rifles, are you? Because getting into the village and back out again with something like that seems impossible, even for the ghost killer.
Yeah, it might be for one man, but there are three of us, and I ain't saying we'd lug out a whole crate. We could hole in the back wall of the lodge. One man goes inside, passes the rifles back out to another man, who passes them on to the third fella, and he caches them in the woods until we can fetch the rest of our bunch. Damn, you're starting to sound like Nighthawk.
It might work. You'd need a lot of luck, though.
A man always needs luck.
I thought you didn't believe in it. Only in powder, shot, and cold steel.
God damn it, don't go using my own words against me. Are you in or not?
Of course I'm in. Don't think for a second.
Someone else comes.
The three men pulled themselves forward through the brush until they could see again. They watched as several Grovant warriors prodded three crying captives up to the lodges. Deaver and Manning came out of their lodges, and their three friends emerged from the other lodge to join them. It was obvious what was about to happen.
We can get behind the lodges while no one is paying attention.
That's just what I was thinking. Come on.
Moving as quickly as they could risk, the three men began circling the village. When they reached a spot that commanded a view of the back of the lodges being used by Deaver and the other gunrunners, Preacher looked around as best he could. Men were still talking in front of the lodges, but he didn't see anybody else moving around. The village was mostly quiet now. The Grovant warriors who had gone on the raid would be with their wives, celebrating their safe return home. Preacher drew his knife, pointed to himself, then to Two Bears, then to Audie. He would go first and sneak into the lodge where the rifles were being stored. That meant he would probably have to kill Deaver and Manning. And that prospect didn't bother Preacher one damn bit. The challenge would be to dispose of the varmints without raising enough of a ruckus to alert the Grovant. The trees and brush grew to within 20 feet of the lodge. While Preacher was crossing that space and cutting an opening in the rear wall, he'd be visible to anybody who happened to look in that direction. It was a risky proposition, but he had to take the chance. He crawled toward the lodge, the heavy hunting knife gripped tightly in his hand. The light was bad back here, with only a faint glow from the campfires that reached this far. And he had that on his side anyway. Moving quickly, Preacher chopped and gouged at the rear wall of the lodge. He didn't want to make a big hole because his enemies might notice that when they came in. All he needed was a gap big enough to fit his shoulders through. While he was wielding the knife with his right hand, he used his left to pull away the branches he cut and scoop dirt out from under the wall. In a matter of minutes, he had a big enough opening to slither through. This was another risky moment. While he was crawling through the hole, the flap hung closed over the entrance, and the lodge was empty. Preacher pulled himself through, grabbed a bearskin rug, and threw it over himself as he pressed his body against the wall where he had cut the opening. He hoped that would be enough concealment to keep Deaver and Manning from noticing that anything was wrong. Preacher lay there, and he did not have to wait very long. He heard someone coming to the lodge.
Get your clothes off.
Silently, Preacher pushed the bearskin robe aside and stood up. Deaver and one of the Assiniboine captives were the only people in the lodge other than him. And Deaver had his back turned. Manning must have gone with the other men. That was a stroke of luck, and Preacher did not intend to waste it. Gripping the knife tightly, Preacher stepped closer to the man. He was about to plunge the blade into Deaver's back and pierce his rotten heart, at the same time clapping his other hand over Deaver's mouth so there would be no outcry, when suddenly he changed his mind. Instead, he lifted the knife, and as the prisoner caught sight of him over Deaver's shoulder and her eyes widened in surprise, Preacher struck. The woman opened her mouth, and Preacher stepped forward quickly and covered her lips with his free hand in case she was about to yell in surprise. He did not want that.
It's all right. Don't yell. I'm here to help you.
She seemed to understand what he was saying. After a moment, she nodded, and he took his hand away from her mouth. He remembered seeing her around the Assiniboine village, and obviously she knew who he was.
Preacher, that terrible white man said you were dead.
Yeah, well, I reckon he was wrong, wasn't he? You can crawl out of there and take off for the woods. Just be quiet about it. There's a rescue party not far off. Two Bears and Audie are out there. They'll help you get back to the others.
The other captives?
I know. We'll get them all free as quick as we can. Right now, you can help by getting the hell out of here, so we'll know you're safe anyway.
She nodded and went to the opening he had made. She was able to crawl through it, even though she was stockier than the lean mountain man. Without wasting any time, Preacher tied Deaver hand and foot and cut a piece off one of the bearskin robes to cram into the gun runner's mouth as a gag. Then he used his knife to pry the lid off of one of the crates. The long wooden box wasn't filled with rifles, but it held more than a dozen of them, along with kegs of powder and shot. Preacher took a couple of the rifles and carried them to the hole in the back wall.
Two Bears.
Here.
Did the woman get away?
Audie is showing her the way back to the others.
Preacher slid the two rifles out through the opening.
Here, take these. I'll have some more here by the time to get back.
Keeping an eye on Deaver, Preacher worked for the next few minutes with swift but unrushed efficiency. Everybody in the Gros Ventre village believed that Deaver was in here enjoying himself with the Assiniboine captive, so it was unlikely anyone would intrude for a while. But it wasn't impossible, so Preacher didn't want to waste any time. He emptied the crate of rifles, and Two Bears passed the weapons on to Audie. Preacher shoved a keg of powder and a keg of shot through the hole as well. Then he opened one of the other crates. It contained 8 rifles. Deaver hadn't budged or made a sound since Preacher had knocked him out. The mountain man began to wonder if he had killed Deaver after all. He had changed his mind at the last minute and struck with the knife's handle instead of its blade because he wanted to question Deaver and find out where the rifles came from. It might be important to know if this was an isolated incident or if someone was trying to organize a continuous flow of guns to the hostile tribes. By the time Preacher had emptied the second crate of rifles, Deaver was starting to stir. Preacher knelt beside the man and pressed the tip of his knife to Deaver's throat.
Don't bother trying to yell or get loose, cause you ain't going nowhere, mister. Look at that look on your face. You're surprised to see me, ain't you? You thought you'd trample me back yonder in Bent Legs Village. You know, stubborn varmints like me are hard to kill.
Anger and hatred blazed in Deaver's eyes. Preacher knew that if the man were loose right now, Deaver would do his best to kill him. Preacher did not intend to let that happen.
Now, you got 2 choices. You can cooperate and tell me what I want to know, or I'll just go ahead and cut your throat right now. It's up to you, Deaver.
Deaver glared at him for a few seconds longer. Then he moved his head slightly in a nod. That made the knife point dig a little deeper into his skin.
All right. Now I'll take that as saying you'll tell me what I want to know. I'm going to pull that gag out of your mouth. But if you try to make a peep before I tell you to, it won't take but a second to shove this knife right through your gizzard. You won't get a single sound out.
Preacher took hold of the gag, but he didn't remove it yet.
Now here's what I want to know. Where'd those rifles come from, and are there any more heading this way?
He tugged the chunk of bear hide out of Deaver's mouth.
You son of a bitch. I'll kill
preacher leaned on the knife. A thin line of blood trickled from the wound it made in Deaver's throat.
That ain't answering my questions. And you done used up all the patience I got for you. I'm gonna ask you one more time, where did the guns come from?
England. We got them from an Englishman named St. John.
You got more rifles coming in? And remember, if I think you're lying to me, I won't have no reason not to go ahead and kill you.
The ones we brought here are all of them for now. Maybe we might get some more in the spring. We'd have to set up a new deal, though. You'd better go ahead and kill me. If you don't, I swear I'll hunt you down, and the next time, I'll make sure you're dead.
You know, I was just thinking the same thing.
Sorry to bother you while you're busy, Willie, but I... Damn!
Manning jerked the pistol out of his belt and brought it up to fire as Preacher's arm whipped around and sent the knife flickering across the room in a deadly throw. The blade buried itself in Manning's chest. There was no time now to worry about Deaver. Preacher left the man where he was lying.
I'll kill you, you bastard.
Preacher paused only long enough to reach down and grab his knife, ripping it out of Manning's chest. Preacher sheathed the knife and pulled both pistols from behind his belt as he ran out of the dwelling. Grovant warriors were coming out of some of the other lodges, looking to see what all the commotion was about. Now, Preacher could have fled toward the woods then, but instead, he ran deeper into the village. Somewhere among the cluster of lodges were Ravenswing and the rest of the Assiniboine captives. If he could find them, he might still be able to free them and get them away during the confusion. Preacher glanced over his shoulder and saw tongues of orange muzzle flames spurting from the shadows under the trees. His heart leaped at the sight. Audie and Two Bears had gotten those rifles into the hands of the rescue party, and now they were joined in the fight. Preacher saw several of the Grovant go down, probably with no idea what it hit.
Ravenswing! Ravenswing, where are you?
Preacher!
Raven!
A shout came from a lodge to his left. But as he veered in that direction, a pair of Grovant warriors armed with bows sent arrows flying toward him. Preacher flung himself down. Before Preacher could get up, a familiar figure rushed past him. Nighthawk drove his tomahawk deep into another Grovant's skull.
Nighthawk! The women are in that lodge! Go get them out of there and head for the trees!
The crow didn't even respond with his customary, He ducked into the lodge. Preacher knew there was no time to reload. He shoved the empty pistols behind his belt and drew his knife again. Preacher turned to see Snakeheart lunging at him. His left hand shot up and grabbed Snakeheart's wrist, stopping the blow in midair before it could land and dash his brains out. Snakeheart thrust his foot between Preacher's calves and hooked it behind the mountain man's knee. Snake landed on top of Preacher, and that gave him an advantage. Quickly, Preacher flung his right leg up and got it in front of Snakeheart's face. Bucking up from the ground, Preacher threw his strength into the move and used his legs to peel Snakeheart off of him. Preacher rolled onto his good side and tried to get his hands and knees under him so he could push himself to his feet. Snakeheart recovered first, though, and bounded up to aim a vicious kick at Preacher's midsection. The mountain man twisted his body and reached out to grab Snakeheart's foot before the kick could land. Preacher dropped his knife. He looked around on the ground, spotted it, and grabbed it before he struggled to his feet. Snakeheart snapped a kick at Preacher's groin. Preacher twisted to take the blow on his thigh instead. Preacher slashed back and forth with a knife, forcing Snakeheart to haul up short in his attack. Suddenly, Snakeheart darted forward again, but Grovant had made a bad mistake. By delaying his attack for a moment, he had given Preacher a chance to catch his breath. And now that mountain man was able to respond with his usual cat-like speed. His free hand shot out, grabbed Snakeheart's wrist, and jerked the chief toward him. Snakeheart's eyes widened in shock as Preacher's knife sank itself into his belly. Preacher put his other hand against Snakeheart's chest and gave him a hard shove. Preacher turned away from the dead chief to see how the rest of the fight was going on. But as he did, a Grovant warrior charged at him with knife upraised for a death blow. Preacher lowered his head and drove himself forward to meet the attack. Preacher went over backward. The Grovant landed on top of him and raised the knife again. The warrior's head suddenly exploded before he could drive the blade down into Preacher's chest. Preacher felt the warm shower of gore and brains splattering across his face. Then, utter darkness came down around him. When he tried to breathe, there was nothing there. No blessed air to fill his lungs. Only a black, terrible weight that blotted out everything else, including Preacher's consciousness.